Hello, and welcome to the Astrology Witch podcast. I'm Tiana, your host, and I'm really excited today because we have Amy Blackthorne on, and we're going to talk about astrology and witchcraft and like see where the day goes. So go ahead, Amy, and introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Tiana. I am really tickled to be here. We were introduced by Ashley from the Seeking Witchcraft podcast, and anybody that's friends with Ashley is just automatically good people in my book. So
thank you.
You are welcome. My name is Amy Blackthorne. I've been a practitioner for, oh my goodness, close to 30 years.
Wow.
Yes, it's a little bit ridiculous. I am the author of currently 3 books. I'm writing my 4th. We have the very first one is Blackthorne's Botanical Magic, and that is an exploration of embracing essential oils in your magic to sort of give yourself access to plant materials you might not otherwise have available. Then we have Sacred Smoke is a guide to creating your very own practice as far as dried plants and creating your own incense goes. It goes into cultural appropriation. It talks about scarcity of materials, as well as things that are really important to know and recognize as magical practitioners. And then the October release was Blackthorne's Botanical Brews. That is a potions book. It's a guide to sort of diving into the kitchen and sort of making your own magic with our favorite potables and how to utilize those in our magical practice. So things like creating syrups, creating cocktails, sodas, all sorts of different lovely potable beverages, and somehow using all of those to brighten your day, bring a little magic to your practice in subtle ways. So things like making tea in the morning.
That is so freaking cool. Yeah, actually, I bought your recent book on Amazon the other day. And so I was like perusing through that. I haven't quite like dug into reading it yet, because I'm trying to do this thing where I'm a more organized human being and I actually finish books that I start. So I'm forcing myself to not start new books until I actually finish the ones I already own, which is really hard.
Bless you. That's better than I'm doing.
It's so terrible. Honestly, I'm the worst. I literally have books from like a year and a half ago that I'm like, I will finish this book in 2021. Like, it's going to happen. But yeah, I did pick your book up and it's really cool. It has such a unique approach to, you know, I don't know. It feels really refreshing in a sense, because I've read a lot of like, you know, different books talking about potions and spells and magic generally. And I really like the approach to like just libations that have different purposes. So that's super cool. Like, I was really impressed with that. It didn't feel like, I think anyone can relate to this, but when you've like been practicing witchcraft for an extended period of time or studying a certain, even just any subject, I feel can become like this, is that when you read enough books about something, at a certain point, books sort of start to feel like they're all saying the same thing in different ways. They're all paraphrasing the same information.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I definitely felt like your book didn't feel like that. So it felt super refreshing because I didn't feel like I was like reading yet another spell book talking about potions and talking about, you know, the Wheel of the Year or whatever. So I had no idea you had other books, because I don't know. I can be like really oblivious. I know that you've been in this space for a really long time, but I don't know. I got to make a list for myself. I think I have like low grade ADD or something.
Well, it's fabulous. Right now I'm working on a brand new book that'll come out somewhere between late fall, early winter. Ooh. This is Blackthorne's Protection Magic, A Witch's Guide to Self-Defense.
Yes. You know what? That's awesome, because, okay, have you ever read... Oh my goodness. It's a book by Dion Fortune that I had to read when I was an outer court gardenerian. And oh my goodness, I can't not for the life of me think of what this book is called. It's called like Psychic Self-Defense or something like that. And it's by Dion Fortune, which if any listeners don't know, was a occultist in the turn of the century. So like 1800s, early 1900s time period. And the book literally is just like musings of shit that's happened to her and how she felt psychically attacked at various points and like the weird shit that her and her group got up to, which is fascinating. I mean, it's a really cool read, but it teaches you absolutely nothing about how to actually psychically defend yourself or protect yourself. So it's great to hear that you're writing a book about that. I will totally pick that up.
Fantastic. And the part that was important to me to include is there's a chapter on physical self-defense. It's not just intention and psychic practice. It's actually how to take care of yourself in the real world.
That is amazing. I was just reading something you posted on social media about how you do karate, apparently.
Yeah, I'm a black belt. I have been since I was 20. I earned my first black belt at 21.
Wow.
Martial arts has been a huge part of my life, my mindset, my experience. I'm now a certified self-defense instructor, and I teach a number of different protection methods, shall we say. It's just really important to me. I had some less than ideal experiences when I was younger, and so being able to protect myself and the people that I care about is paramount to my identity.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic. I really love when any magical practitioner or witch or whatever title that person's going by, someone who's doing something, you know, witchy, woo, spiritual, they combine that spirituality with something completely, I guess, mundane, you would say. Like, that is so cool because it really brings a lot of magic into everyday life, which I think a lot of people struggle with actually putting into practice.
Oh yeah. There's so many people that look at this as point A is my magical life and point B is my mundane life and never the twain shall meet. And that's not the case. There is, you get one life. You get to bring it the pieces where you need them to go. Compartmentalization is sometimes very necessary, especially if you're in the broom closet, but there's nothing to fear from being who you are as a whole person, even if it's in subtle ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that people can, you know, like you were saying, compartmentalize things and areas of their life and maybe even feel obligated. But I feel like to a certain extent, obviously, like you said, sometimes you need to compartmentalize. But to a certain extent, if it becomes an integral part of who you are, it can feel like you're sort of like a fissured person at us, you know, and I think integration is really important, you know, to bring that spirituality, to bring the magical aspect into the mundane. Personally, I think that's how we can all avoid midlife crises and, you know, freaking out at age 45 or 60 or whatever, you know, whatever point people have a mental breakdown at. I don't know.
You're not wrong. I worked in security for 15 years, executive protection, private security, and I felt it was very important to my career to keep those things separate. There was Amy Blackthorne, the writer, and then there's Amy, the security consultant, and I kept them very separate for a very long time because it's such a conservative field, and it blew up in my face spectacularly. I was the head of security for two high-rises here in Wilmington, Delaware, and it was really, it was a very interesting job. very high stress. And it was really important to me to keep everything as separate as I could. And that meant that I didn't really talk about my life outside of work, inside work. And it led one of my officers to do some investigating on his own and finding out that I was a witch.
Was
not great. I walked in at 5 o'clock in the morning and I get a very smug smile. So you're a witch, huh?
Delaware's. Oh my goodness.
I thought I was going to have a heart attack. Delaware is a very small state. So my first thought, of course, is who did he talk to? But no, there was some sort of Google magic and he was able to figure out.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. So of course he told everyone.
Oh, wow. That's like, I mean, I think I'm to a certain point where I don't really care who knows what necessarily, but there is sort of an aspect of like what kind of witch I am and like what kind of Wiccan I am. And I keep some of that a little private, you know, just because it's nobody's business. And it does sort of feel like a violation of privacy to a certain extent, I think. You know, especially depending on how far in or out of the broom closet you are. But wow, that's a lot. You know, just it's so funny because sometimes I think people know more about me than they're letting on, but I'm not sure because I can't I don't want to confirm it and like remove all doubt. But yeah, you know, it's funny. So I don't know if you know that I have another podcast with my boyfriend. Okay, so I have another podcast with my boyfriend called The Christian and the Witch, because he's a Christian and I'm obviously a witch. And we talk about like different issues. Mostly we talk about witchcraft and Wicca and like how he feels about it and like what his approach should be, or if there's like a Christian equivalent to said Wheel of the Year holiday or whatever. You know, we discuss those things and sometimes we discuss politics and things like that. But it's funny because we have this podcast that's called The Christian and the Witch. And the other day I was visiting with my mom and she just looked at me because she knows that I'm a witch and she knows that I'm a pagan. That's how I identify. But she's a born again Christian. And so she looked at me and goes, "A Christian and a witch, huh? How does that work?" And I just was like, is she listening to my podcast? Like, why would she phrase it? Like, the way that she phrased it, it was just, I was just like, you know, I don't know, but it does. So, but yeah, I mean, I can't imagine just being kind of like called out like that, you know, like.
It was pretty scary.
Yeah. Did you feel like completely violated or like, were you okay with it eventually? Like,
We're friends now, but it's been 8 years. It was really blindsiding. I felt completely violated. I was really upset. And the way that it all came down was, I mean, it was more coworkers making snarky comments. Things like, there's a very large arrangement of, orchids behind my desk. I was head of security that took up the whole lobby, the desk.
Yeah.
So they had a beautiful ornate orchid arrangement that changed seasonally. And so an hour or so after this person went downstairs, I would get a phone call from the gentleman in the control room saying, "Those orchids just changed color. Did you do that?" "No, they replaced them last week. Thanks."
What? Yeah. You know, it's so funny. And I mean, kind of annoying sometimes, I think, when people jump to the conclusion that you must be insane or they jump wholeheartedly into believing that you're like Harry Potter level witch, just, you know, making shit levitate or whatever. And I don't know, like, what is your approach to reacting to people like that? Normally, I don't know why I'm like this, but I'm like, I just sort of lean harder into it. So, you know, like my brother, he's, I don't know if he's an atheist or what, but he basically was like, "Oh, so you're a pagan? Oh, so you believe in this? Oh, so you think you can do this?" Like, just kind of shitty. And I was like, "Yep, sure do." Like, I just like lean harder into that stereotype just to be, I don't know. That's just my personality, I guess. But like, what is your approach to when people say shit like that to you?
Most of the time, it's really easy to blow off. I can laugh about it. I can joke back with them. But that was the one time that I just was really thrown for a loop. So I'm glad that I was able to, A, make the jokes that I did and sort of blow it off. Because once they didn't get the reaction they were looking for, it just sort of petered out. It didn't have any real effect as far as lasting goes. But that was a singular case because I'm everybody's boss. So if you're going to be, if you're going to be crappy about it, you can find a job somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, really, especially if you're, I guess it's great to be in a position of power like that so people don't try and deliberately and directly abuse you. But yeah, I mean, wow, that's wild to think about. I wouldn't know how to react, really, if someone had approached me at work, you know, like that.
Yeah, I didn't want the next person who was had you know, a different life arrangement to be subject to that ridicule, yeah. Those feelings. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, it's sort of socially acceptable, or I would say not acceptable, frowned upon in this day and age to not discriminate or directly harass someone about their religion. But for some reason, pagans and Wiccans and even witches to a certain extent don't get that same courtesy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into talking about astrology, if you would like.
I'd love to. It's the Leo full moon and everything's all tingly outside.
I know. I was like, dang, it's a full moon while we're recording this. I'm very excited. It feels kismet a little bit. So I was thinking, what are your views on astrology? I feel like everyone has a different view. Everyone has a different kind of mindset. And so, like, do you like a particular style of astrology? Do you follow specifically like Western tropical, Vedic astrology? Do you, I don't know, have any specific areas of interest?
Read and understand their birth chart, rather aligned with the Carl Jung quote, we are born at a given moment, in a given place, and like vintage years of wine, we have the qualities of the year and season in which we are born. Astrology does not lay claim to anything more. And it's so fantastic. It's really that. When I try and talk to my students about understanding astrological placements, it's not about the planet necessarily affecting you. It's sort of the opposite. It's letting you know that these are the things that are happening, and it gives you sort of a leg up to understanding why things are happening and at what point you can expect them to happen again. I mean, we're coming up on the first Mercury retrograde of the year, and that is when everything starts to go nuts. Well, if the shadow period is any indication of this, it's going to be bumpy.
yeah, for sure. You know, I think there's so much to dive into, not just in like personal natal charts, but obviously, like you're saying, like Mercury retrogrades and astrological alignments that happen during the year, eclipses, full moons, new moons, and, you know, where the planets are at that point. That can definitely give you a snapshot of like what things are going to be like for you, depending on what house you have said planet in, you know, and also what sign your moon is in. You know, we've got different zodiac moons across the year. So if you have a Scorpio moon, then you might feel the Scorpio moon differently than someone who has, I don't know, an Aries moon or something.
Absolutely. The Leo moon is rising overhead as we speak, and that is my placement. I have a Leo moon. So the minute I saw the moon come up, I've just been overwhelmed with this fabulous creative energy writing this project.
Yeah. And being in the spotlight.
I joke that my Leo moon is what allows me to be an author out in the world.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I always talk about, you know, the Leo moon. People tend to think that Leo placements are like vain or they're like full of themselves, and like true embodiment of Leo energy is like shining for the joy of it, because like that's what the sun does. It's not about ego. It's not about like, you know, being a narcissist or whatever. It's like just enjoying the joy of that expression that is truly your identity.
Exactly. It balances out the Virgo sun and the Virgo rising. I can get outside of my, yes. I have a Libra stellium in the first house.
So much beauty. That is a lot. Like a lot of like just like you must either be just like obsessed with like aesthetics or obsessed with like social justice. Or both. I don't know.
Also you know, both. Like,
that's half of really cool.
The section that I just finished today for the new book is how to escape unjust capture. There's how to get out of zip ties, how to get out of handcuffs, how to get out of rope ties. Like your job is to go out and do the things that you find are necessary, and the capture of such would impede that. So
definitely. Wow. Okay. I definitely need this book. How to get out of handcuffs and zip ties. I'm going to need this. That's really cool.
One of the things. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it's really cool to think of how your chart is sort of playing out in your life, and to have that stellium in Libra in the first house. Well, I mean, of course it makes you very balanced and beautiful. Or, and this is something I think people don't think about, is they either think, oh, I'm a Leo, I must be center of attention. But it can also be someone avoiding the spotlight. It can manifest that way, especially if you have hard aspects that are like messing up your sun, or wherever you have Leo. Because that's, you know, one of the areas you would shine because the sun is there and what house it's in. And if it's debilitated, that could be you just completely shunning the spotlight, not wanting to shine or not knowing how to shine, or like wanting to shine, but feeling like you never get to really shine and show who you are. People not understanding like who you really are, you know? So it can have the opposite effect, ironically.
You know where that moon is, that Leo moon?
Yeah.
It's in my 12th house.
Oh my goodness. You know what? That makes perfect sense though, right? Because you shine talking about occult related topics. So, and I mean, the 12th house does deal with the hidden things, the secrets. I mean, so that kind of plays out in a really cool way. And, you know, I mean, it does seem like a debilitating placement, but when you think about like the 12th house, so people get freaked out by the 12th house. At least I used to, when I was first learning astrology, I'd be like, oh my God, my undoing, you know, cause that's like the general description of the 12th house is like your self undoing or whatever. but really the 12th house can talk about the occult, the secrets, not secrets necessarily that other people are keeping about you, but like secrets you don't know about yourself, you know, your hidden wounds. But it can talk about like healing those wounds and self-healing, and it can be an incredibly healing house for someone who maybe does a lot of shadow work. Yeah, and you might need to do shadow work if you have Leo there, but it also could mean that you really shine a lot when you do shadow work, that once you work on that darker aspect of yourself, which obviously you are invariably doing by writing so many books about witchcraft, that, you know, you're able to truly shine by working through those things that are sitting in your 12th house. So yeah. That's, you know, so, I mean, I tried to like lean away from, oh, this, I don't, what I like to call catastrophizing a placement, which people can do. They can be like, oh my God, this, you know, this is here, so I'm shit or whatever, you know? And I try not to think like that, because I think every chart has its strengths and weaknesses. Not every chart is going to be all sunshines and rainbows. And like, man, whoever that person is, if it actually exists, they must just be like, I don't know, bizarre to exist in this world, like a rainbow or unicorn or something. You know, like I have not seen one yet. So I can't wait till somebody's chart comes across me that I can like experience someone having like the perfect alignment and feeling perfect about themselves, because I just feel like it doesn't exist at all.
And it can't.
Yeah, and it can't, exactly. Like not with Saturn, not with, like, you know, like there have to be lessons, there has to be something there. And that's the beauty of humanity for me, is, you know, seeing that. And it, I don't know, I can't get over the fact that you have a stellium in the first house all in Libra. It's like really killing me. Is that, what are the planets there? Do you have planets there?
Oh yeah.
You must have, right? You have planets there?
Venus, Mercury, and Jupiter.
Oh my goodness. So you, wow. Venus, Mercury, and Jupiter. So you have great capacity to be wealthy, and also to be like appearing very beautiful to people, because you got that Venus in the first house. That's so cool. You lucky. That's amazing. That's really cool. You know, it must be a lot for you, because I feel like wherever someone has stelliums, and I have a stellium in the third house, wherever someone has that is like the area they struggle.
Oh, you know? And it's, and there's Saturn. It's at 8 degrees. So it's like, it's almost in the 12th house.
Oh, so it's like it's bleeding back out of like out of your 12th house into your first a little bit.
Yep.
Interesting. But then, interestingly enough, your sun is in your 12th, but those energies are still going to bleed into the first. So you can still shine on a public, you know, in a public facing way. Wow, that is so cool. I would just love to look at your chart. I'm so nosy. but that's really cool. I mean, obviously you'd be, you know, having to grow with like all of the your ideas of beauty and like how people view you, and then like the Jupiter, how you expand and grow, and like whether or not like how you feel about that, especially with Virgo. I can imagine it's kind of like a thing. Virgo is so, I love Virgos. I know people have mixed feelings about Virgos, but Virgos are amazing. They are like, I mean, they're ruled by crafts and skills, maybe everyday crafts and skills, but like literally the mundane everyday crafts and skills are what get people to achieve in life. You know, I mean, you build those skills up, like you're pretty unstoppable.
Oh yeah. And there are four workstations in my office right now, and I'm putting in another one.
Oh my goodness. You are. That's incredible. I want to be that organized. But that is so cool because, you know, I mean, Virgo sun and rising. So honestly, that makes a lot of sense because you've got all these books out, you're helping people, you know? And I mean, I think that's like Virgo at its best, is like being of service, you know?
And I have to be this organized to do, I mean, when you look at Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, it is 83,000 words. So I had to have my original outline, and then I had to have an outline for each chapter, and then I had to have an outline of all the oils that were going to go in there, all 53 of them, and then the 150 recipes that go in there. So I had lists for lists, and then I had a master list for all the lists.
Oh my goodness. And not only, you know what though, but Virgo's perfectly equipped for that, right? Like mm-hmm. deep down in the details, like that's amazing. The idea of me having to do that sounds incredibly stressful, and I feel like I'd probably give up like halfway through doing that. But that is, I mean, that's a huge achievement to be able to do something like that. I think that it is a rare gift. And it Virgos, in a way, can remind me of Capricorns mm-hmm. In the sense that like they do work really hard. And they're really hard on themselves, but at the same time, they don't necessarily go seeking recognition for the hard work that they put in or the ways that they help people.
Yeah, it's so important to make sure that everybody's taken care of, but the credit aspect just never, ever enters the mind. It's as, you know, as long as it gets done, then it got done.
Yeah, I feel like Virgo and Capricorn are like the signs that are like, they do things for the sake of doing them. And that's like almost the reward in a sense, where other signs might not be that way. They might seek recognition or leadership or some kind of reward for it, and they just don't. And it's like, it's so underappreciated, I feel.
I agree. We get the short end of the stick. You know, people call us nitpicking. We're just organized. Yeah. We know the official way to do things.
Yeah, and you have this keen eye that can just see things with a sort of laser focus, and not everybody wants to see themselves that way. And I think that can be difficult because that's how Virgo mind works, is to, I mean, unintentionally point out other people's flaws and shortcomings, but for the sake of helping them improve and be better, which can be an incredibly healing experience, but man, it's difficult. My boyfriend's a Virgo, and I've got like several of my friends are Virgos, and they are the most loving, wonderful people. But man, sometimes I'm like, why are you so critical of me? What is your problem? Leave me alone. And I get so defensive. I'm just like, I can't talk to you right now. And then I'm like, they're right, though. You know?
I collect Sagittarians.
Oh, my goodness.
It's funny. Love on a Rotten Day. So have you ever checked out the On a Rotten Day series?
No.
They're astrology books. But they're talking about the negative impacts of our signs on different areas of our life. So there's love on a rotten day. There's work on a rotten day. But they categorize the Virgo Sagittarius pairing as, please shoot yourself now.
Oh my goodness. The Virgo and the Sagittarius?
The Virgos and Sagittarians in a relationship together.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Wow, that's rough, because I got a Sag rising. Wow, that's so funny. I did not know that, but that's freaking hilarious. I guess it sort of makes sense if you think about the fact that, like, Sagittarius as a sign likes looking at the big picture and being really abstract, and Virgo is into the details. So in a sense, they are kind of opposite mindsets to have. Like, they could be completely at odds. But I also think, like, if it works, And if there's anyone listening and you want to DM me, like if you're in a relationship and you're a Virgo or a Sagittarius with a Virgo or Sagittarius, like let me know, because I want to hear how that functions. Like, you know, sometimes things don't make sense and they work for some reason. But I also think too that people put a lot of stock in like, oh, well, I'm a Virgo sun sign, so of course I can't be with a Sagittarius, or like whatever the, you know, rhetoric is. And the reality is there's so much that goes into what makes people compatible.
When we look at the way that we relate to our partners, especially because that's a very insular bond, you know, people don't see it from, they see it from the outside. It's impossible to see it from the inside because you're not in there. Especially during the pandemic when you're spending so much time at home and in close quarters because you can't go anywhere else.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, just speaking in terms of astrology, there's, like you were saying, like the way you communicate with your partner and the side you show to them that you may not, that other people may not see. You know, I mean, you might be a Virgo, but you might also have your Venus in, well, I know you have yours in Libra, but you might also have yours in a completely different sign, right? Virgo and Libra are actually incredibly similar in my view, but you could have easily had it in, I don't know, Leo or something, which is a totally different approach than having it in Virgo. And so even though you're a Virgo, having your Venus in Leo, you might be compatible with someone who's also a fire sign or has their Venus in a water sign or something. And it might not seem like something that works at first look, but ultimately is really nourishing to you. And also, too, people don't consider your Mercury sign, which is how we communicate, or your third house, which rules communication. You know, how do you speak to people? You might have a completely different sign there. And yes, maybe you're a Virgo, but maybe you really get along with air signs because your Mercury is ruled by an air sign or something. Or, you know, the way that you communicate is receptive to that energy, whatever the sign may be.
And when you're talking about partnerships, you should really check out where your Mars is as opposed to where their Mars is, because eventually you're going to argue about something and you need to know how they feel about my Mars is in Cancer. So,
oh man, don't like fighting.
Want to be harmony in the house. Everything's cool. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much that needs to get done that doesn't involve arguing. Like, let's figure this out and move on.
Feel like you fight through hugs. Like, talk it out. I feel like Cancer does everything with love, like in my way, where I'm just like headbutting everyone because I'm a Taurus, and I'm just like, but I have a Libra moon, which is just amazing for being avoidant of wanting to have any kind of conflict whatsoever. So I totally understand the wanting everything to be harmonious and chill. You know, I hate conflict, but also, I feel that I can also be like a very conflicting person, like not conflicting person, but a person who can be combative at times unintentionally, but just I have like, I think I have Mars in the seventh, which means that I start fights with other people on unintentionally if I'm not careful, you know, and that's super fun. Like, you know, that can be really dangerous, but like people don't think about, like you were saying, Mars placement can be sure sexual chemistry, but it can be fighting too, for sure. Mm-hmm. Or arguing, like you said. And, you know, not even just that, but like fifth house, rules falling in love. So how are you falling in love with other people? Like what way do you like to be romanticized or whatever, or what way do you express that love can fall there too. And even too, like, your north node, south node, are you guys on the same life journey together? Or are they completely, you know, not in the same line of thinking? Because that might make you conflict with each other.
You know what I've noticed? When you look at the fifth house, that usually impacts your first love. So mine's an Aquarius, and my first love was an Aquarius. You know, you're looking for someone who has those qualities that really help nurture your specific needs. And finding someone of that sun sign happens more often than you think.
Wow. You know, I didn't think about that, but that's fascinating to think about. God, my first love. What was my first love? Oh man, I can't even think of it. I guess I think I have Aries in the fifth, I think, or Aries or Taurus in the fifth, I think. And you know, that's wild to think about, like, oh, what was their sun sign? I wasn't into astrology back then, so I couldn't tell you. Like back then, I think I was into reading cosmopolitan horoscopes, but that was the extent of it. I feel like I'm such a strange person in the sense that, and I don't know, maybe other people can relate to this. I always talk with my coven mates about this, about how, you know, coming into witchcraft was such a weird but like perfectly at home thing for me to do, because despite me not really identifying with being a witch my whole life, like I really didn't come into it till I was in my 20s, and I didn't come into like a specific tradition until I was in my late 20s, early 30s. So I mean, definitely being like a late bloomer type person. But ironically, I had a Raven Grimassi book in my book collection when I was a teenager that I used, but somehow didn't think that I was into witchcraft. I read books about Greek mythology. I was super into Greek mythology when I was a kid. And at the same time, I was like into all of these things. Like I would do daily meditations. I would do things that like now I would call shielding and centering, but didn't have a name for back then. And the things that I believed about how the world functioned in my brain are totally aligned with Wicca and paganism and being a witch.
So you hit your Saturn return and said, oh, hey, this really is who I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, I honestly think that is what happened for sure. Because I had like a weird crisis at 26. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, what is life? Like, oh, what is happening to me? And then that's absolutely what happened. You know, I didn't think about it in terms of my Saturn return, but that makes perfect sense, because I definitely had like a weird crisis, like a dark night of the soul type moment, you know, before I sort of came out of this. And, you know, it's just funny how when you look at things, the things you look at change.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes. My very first love, my Aquarian, he was the result of a spell. I was
really?
Goodness, yes. I was 18, and the local store, no, local being an hour away, store was hosting Silver Ravenwolf, and it was the, you know, it was the late 90s, so she was everywhere and everything.
That so is
we
so
went.
Cool.
We went to the. It was my mother's best friend and I went. When I came out of the burn closet, she went to tell her best friend, and she said, oh, hey, me too. So mom had a nice friend she could dump me on the weekends, and we could go do witchy things together. But I went and we did this. It was a weekend long event. It was a couple classes on Saturday, and we had this lecture on silver bullet magic. And so I'm going to tell you, so she goes around the circle of this very large room, like 20 by 15. So there's 30 people sitting around this room. She hands a balloon to everybody. She hands an index card out to everybody and a pen. She says, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is wish magic. I'm like, okay, I'm here for it. I got a blue balloon. I got a pen. Let's figure out what we're doing with it. So she says, I want you to write down a wish. I want you to figure out what it is your heart really, really needs and write it down on this index card. And then we're going to fold it up and we're going to tuck it inside your balloon. And you inflate this balloon. You throw all of your intention into the balloon. And then you sit on it to pop it and send it out into the universe.
Interesting.
It worked. So I wrote down that I was looking for a romantic partner that I could share my witchy side with, that was there for me when I needed. My doodle. Oh, my poor little doodle. That had all the partnership that I needed. My previous relationship was just a disaster. It was, you know, the cute guy in high school who's a mess. So I needed the opposite of that. And within 2 or 3 days of this spell being released out into the universe, I got a call for a babysitting job from a family that I went to martial arts with. So they're like, hey, you know, we have to go away for the weekend. Would you mind coming and hanging out at our house? Like, just be a responsible adult. Our son is an adult, but the rest of the kids aren't going to listen to him. So be there as backup. High five, oh. No problem. And so it was the cute guy at the dojo that I had been, you know, had my eye on. But I came out of the womb 6 feet tall. So I never knew how guys were going to react, because a lot of them were intimidated by a woman who's taller than them.
Right.
And he's like, no, you're amazing. You're a goddess. Like, let's hang. And it's been, goodness, 22 years, and we're still great friends. He moved to the opposite side of the world, and we still catch up on Messenger, and we still talk, and I still consider him one of my dearest friends.
That is so cool. You know, it's so funny, because the whole time you're telling me this story, I can't help thinking that my boyfriend's best friend is an Aquarius. And I feel like Aquarius and Virgo have this instant unspoken bond, mm-hmm. like a comfortability for you guys. And honestly, it's kind of envious. You know, him and his friend can go like 48 hours just hanging out, playing games on the internet. They're on like Discord or something, and they don't even talk. And I'm just like, they just understand one another. So, I mean, was it like that for you? Like,
yes. Oh my goodness, yes. It was like we had this unspoken language. You know, one person was thinking, the other person was already doing, and it was fantastic. I mean, even as a young person, to have someone who really responded to what I thought and what I felt in a way that was just about precognition, because I hadn't even spoken that thing out loud yet, and he was already right there for whatever I needed.
Wow, that's freaking amazing. That, what a cool experience to have, and to be able to say that you guys are still friends and you maintain that relationship.
Just so lucky. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, some people don't even get that real love type experience, you know, that first love type experience. So to have that and then be able to say like, oh yeah, and they're still my friend to this day, that's really cool. So what do you feel about stelliums, just because you have one and I've got one? I'm just curious, do you feel like it's been a helpful placement for you to have? Do you feel like it's been a detriment? Do you think it's been challenging? Do you think it could make you famous one day? I mean, I think you're pretty famous in the witch world, but like, what are your thoughts?
I think it's really a great driving force, in a way that if you don't understand it, it could be a detriment. But once you embrace it, just going with it full steam ahead, like I know that I'm going to be on the bestseller list one day, and I'm already working on some urban fantasy fiction, like getting out there and stretching my writing chops.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you're actually a part of the witchcraft community, so you're not just like one of those authors on Amazon who's like must be a ghostwriter. So there's definitely room for that. I definitely see you hitting the bestsellers list, because a lot of your topics are really mainstream. Witchcraft is becoming more mainstream. And I think your books are fun. At least the one that I bought, the newest one, is it has a sense of fun. Like, I could have a party with these themed drinks and all my non-witch friends would be all about it, you know, because it's a fun thing to do, even if you're not somebody who identifies as a witch.
Exactly. Essential oils are so mainstream now. You can find them in the grocery store. So figuring out how to use them and use them safely is amazing. I mean, to get out there and figure out how to have the spritzes you want, the room sprays you need, the magical associations you understand, and even things like hydrosols. They're the byproducts of making essential oils. So like, why wouldn't we use these in a magical way as well? So it's really branching out to reach people who are maybe more closer to a new age idea set, and helping them understand that magic is there for them too.
Absolutely. And you know, too, I think those are the most loved and often used books are the ones that become a resource like that, that have all of those. Can I use this essential oil? How does this drink, you know, apply magically? Or what can I do with this? Things you can actually do that, you know, you would use often, especially someone who has a witchcraft practice, but even someone who doesn't might use that as a resource to know what's safe to use. You know, I mean, those things are actually very helpful as opposed to, I mean, not that I don't love the other kinds of books that are more existential or theory based. Those are cool too. But the books we end up using the most are like the herbal compendium or the, you know, the things that I really need to know, like how much of this herb can I use before it becomes toxic, or can I mix this essential oil with this essential? It's not going to be a volatile mixture or something like that. You know, those things are incredibly practical. And I think people don't think about that, but then, you know, later it's like, this is the book you end up picking up the most because it's actually very useful.
Yeah. One of the first books that I found really that blended both of those for me was The Witch's Circle by Maria K. Sims. So it's rituals and the craft of the cosmic muse. So it has rituals for every full moon based on their astrological associations. And I'm like, why did nobody else do this before this book came out?
Her books are great, and they're not really that well known, maybe because they're a little older, but they're so useful, like so useful for sure. The Planetary Magic book that she has. Like,
oh, yes.
Yes. Awesome. And those are some of the elements I would really like to bring into some of the astrology episodes that I do, talking about magical workings people can do during these different times, and also hitting up against like, what placement do you have this in your natal chart, and how does this apply, and can you like harness the magic of your natal chart to help you get a job that's in a more personal way, you know, or to hone in on developing these skills, or you know, doing that shadow work to really nurture your moon sign if it's in like a hard placement or aspected. Do you need to, you know, I don't know, do an herbal working, or, you know, cast a spell or a circle and do a ritual for something that's going to ultimately help you based on planetary alignments and natal chart placements. And, you know, obviously, like you were saying, like the moons that happen throughout the year, the eclipses that happen throughout the year, you know, and all the collective, you know, planetary movements that everybody deals with, but like, where do they hit in your chart? What house are they in?
Just love them.
Yeah. So I have one more question, and then we can probably close out unless you have anything else to add, but I'm curious, what ways do you find that you use astrology in your witchcraft? And what ways do you find that, like, you are really interested in astrology, but maybe don't use as much in your witchcraft, but still have a vast interest in?
It's really important to me, especially for my full moons, that I align with whichever moon is currently overhead, but as an inspiration for how I'm recognizing that it is this period of the year. So for the Leo full moon, I might do something to help engage my own personal spotlight. If I feel I need to work on organization, that's not my Virgo, then my personal spotlight will be in making my home a place that I want to be all of the time, because, you know, it's a pandemic and we're here. So I have a beautiful little shrines around my office. I have, you know, I've put things up that allow me to see where I am and also reflect back. So I have the moon faces as a bunting across from my desk, and there's blue and purple and little amethyst strands of lights, like things that really make me feel like it's okay to put myself first for once.
Yeah. You know what? And I feel like that is really hard for Virgos to do, is to not like completely empathize with the other person to an extent that you forget you exist, you know, and it's like the gift and curse of being a Virgo, I feel, but I really cherish it because I know that people in my life who have strong Virgo placements are some of the most selfless, giving, generous people, and they have healed me in ways that they probably don't even realize. And, you know, that's an incredible gift. But then it's kind of like cancer in the sense that you have to give to yourself, because otherwise you're pouring from an empty cup, you know. But that is incredible. I really like that you made it, you know, customized to yourself and your needs, but then also your utilizing small things that people don't think about, like the amethyst strands and the colors, to really personalize it and bring in those energies. Like that's really cool, because I tend to overcomplicate things and make things elaborate and then get overwhelmed and not do them at all, which isn't that helpful. So it's really cool that you've made them simple enough to be doable, you know, because at the end of the day, like, it is more helpful to find something that we will actually do as opposed to something that sounds great in theory and like is a great idea conceptually, but, you know, is too complicated to actually carry out. Or do we actually have the time for that?
Exactly. You've got to look where your cozy signs are, where does Cancer affect your chart, and figure out how to apply that into your spaces. Like my office, I've got my writing station, and I've got my station for mailing out stuff for my tea shop, Black Rose Botanicals. I've got the former owners of this house, for some reason, chose one of the closets and put in bookshelves in the walls. So I actually took a couch-sized love sack and I crammed it in this closet. And that's my podcast studio. That's where I record my podcast. So everything's cozy and warm and nurturing and close. And I don't have to worry about the rest of the world for a while.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how intentional this was, but having that love sack there actually prevents the noise from bouncing too much. So it has a practical use also, aside from being super comfortable. You know, and also the fact that you have so much Libra in your first house, that probably helps the interior design aspect. I'm just imagining how cozy your home must feel and just having all that like beautiful aesthetic, but then it's like super cozy. That's really cool.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So if any listeners want to follow you on social media and want to buy your books, I will put links down below, but where can they find you on like Instagram, Facebook? Like what are your...
On Instagram, you can find me, Amy Blackthorn Author, all one word, on Instagram. You can buy my books at amyblackthorn.com or blackthornsbotanicals.com. And you can absolutely follow me on Twitter at Morrigan's Witch. And I have a couple different Facebook pages. You can just check on Blackthorn's Botanicals, or you can find Amy Blackthorn Author for bunches of goofy memes and the occasional update on a book.
Nice. That sounds awesome. And I'll go ahead and link those in the description as well. So if you want to find her and, you know, don't want to take notes while you're listening to this, then feel free to check out the description and I'll link everything for you guys so you can find it very simply. But thanks so much for coming on with me. This has been a lot of fun. And I love hearing other people's perspective. It always gives me ideas, not only for like witchcraft or I mean life in general, right? But also, you know, getting the astrological perspective as well is really cool. So thanks so much for sharing this with me and taking the time out.
Thank you guys so much for having me and my dogs.
Absolutely. Lulu, I feel like I've met you from afar. well, anyway, so thanks so much for listening. If you guys want to go ahead and follow me on social media, you can find me on Facebook. The Astrology Witch Podcast now has a Facebook page. I'm on Instagram at Astrology Witch Podcast and on Twitter at Astro W Podcast. So feel free to join me there. Let me know your thoughts. Shoot me a DM for future episodes. And I will see you next time. Thanks so much.